And you are listening to Radio Regent. My name is Norman Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, in the studio with Adrian Worrell. And we are, this is a Caravana weekend. I guess the people are, every time I turn on the radio, I hear about this bank Caribbean carnival. And it's amazing how the media has it. Maybe a mandate came down where they have to say bank, Caribbean, whatever they call it. But most people, African, Indians, and otherwise, refer to it as Caravana. We're getting ready to play an interview that I did with the General Gordon Baker Jr. For Uhuru Radio. And General Gordon Baker Jr. was, or he's still in the land of the living, but he worked, he was an auto worker for 40 years. He was the first African American to refuse to fight in Vietnam. He went to Cuba, defied the U.S. government, and went to Cuba and met with Ernesto Che Guevara. And he was a founding member of the League of Revolutionaries for a League of Revolutionary Black Workers. He also was a member of the Revolutionary Action Movement organization that J. Edgar Hoover referred to as a highly secret all-Negro Marxist-Leninist Maoist terrorist group. And he is a very good friend of mine. This is General Gordon Baker Jr.
Habarigani, and my name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. This is Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. We're on the Uhuru Radio Network every Sunday at this particular time. And Swahili, I guess, is spoken in Mozambique and parts of Kenya, Tanzania, well, all of East Africa's interesting language. And we have just paid tribute once again to Bobby Bland. And if you get a chance to pick up the book Soul of the Man, Bobby Blue Bland by Charles Farley, I will probably be writing a review of that book for the next issue of the Burning Spear. Now we're getting ready to listen to General Gordon Baker, who was the first African born in the United States to refuse to fight in Vietnam. General Gordon Baker was... if you listen to the speech, Message to the Grassroots, and Malcolm X was saying, you're afraid to bleed, that is General Gordon Baker saying, we'll bleed, and Malcolm says, I said, you're afraid to bleed, and General says, I said, we'll bleed, that's General Baker. Also, General Gordon Baker, I used to live in General Baker's house, and he had a copy of a book called Color Us Colored, by Elombe Brathwaite. But the coloring book was Cecil Brathwaite, is Elombe Brathwaite's slave name. And it's, if you ever get a chance to check that particular coloring book out, it is hilarious. But General Gordon Baker is a retired auto worker. He's a member of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. And he's going to be talking about the situation in Detroit. The city of Detroit supposedly is bankrupt. Well, it's not supposedly, it is bankrupt. And General Gordon Baker will give you some ideas as to what is taking place in Detroit, as well as what is taking place with retirees. This is General Gordon Baker Jr. And you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada, and on the line with me is General Gordon Baker Jr., who is a retired auto worker and a member of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, and he also happens to be the first African-American to refuse to fight in the Vietnam War. Welcome, General Baker. How you doing?
All right. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I guess I should I should basically say that I've known you for many years, so
so
we can't pretend that we don't know one another.
All right. Okay. Sure.
I guess the first question I want to ask you, and which I guess is the biggest question, one of the biggest questions in the world today is, you know, what's taking place in Detroit with this bankruptcy? And Detroit went from being, I guess, the fourth or the fifth largest city, it went down to, I guess, the teens to bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And Detroit was, you know, well, I lived in Detroit for a second, and when I was in Detroit, you could, people used to talk about you could get fired at 12 o'clock, and, it, you know, by 2 o'clock, you could go get another job.
Yeah, right, right.
In the 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, really. Norman, let me just say that things are different. We really done hit a real bottleneck. I guess this is Detroit's 312th year anniversary in existence, and I guess we done hit the lowest point of the 312 years. This current set of circumstances with this bankruptcy has the whole city in turmoil. And it's in turmoil pretty much because people now are not familiar with how a bankruptcy works, especially a municipal bankruptcy. We sat back a couple of years ago and we watched both the Chrysler and GM bankruptcies and how they went through with federal government aid. But that's nothing like the municipal bankruptcy. And so we got everything is in the air. I guess the... everybody's concerned because they figure all the assets of the city will be sold off. That means Belle Isle or the island that we use for partying and picnicking over the years. The Detroit Zoo will be sold off. The museum sold off. We have the largest water and sewage plant in the area. Matter of fact, the Detroit water and sewage serves almost all of southeastern Michigan. That'll be up for grabs to be sold. We have an awful lot of concerns under this current system of bankruptcy. One of the biggest problems we got in this bankruptcy is that we have this thing called the emergency manager in Detroit. It was negotiated in Michigan, you know, just last year, and it's called Act 436 that gives an emergency manager a right to basically come in and seize control of the city, fire all the elected officials if they want to, sell off assets, cut contracts, you know, break agreements, you know, so we already are disenfranchised. And
let
that's what
you,
makes it.
Let me ask you a question. So when you said they can, and so if there's a politician that they disagree with, they can fire that person. That's what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, they can fire him or dismiss him. Matter of fact, in Detroit right now, we have the mayor still getting paid, and so are five council people. Some of the other council people, one of the council people turncoated on us and joined the emergency manager. Another one, Charles Pugh, ran off to Seattle and is in hiding, and one other one quit and went down to Jackson, Mississippi. So we only have a skeleton crew, I think six council people that's still operating, but they're still getting paid. But that emergency manager,
the one that went to Jackson, did he go to work with Choke or he just went to Jackson?
Yeah, he went down there, Kwame Kenyatta. He went down there, the way I understand it, to work with Lumumba down there, who won the mayorship in Jackson, Mississippi earlier this year, which was his story. But that's the situation we face with. We know we don't know where this thing is going. Obviously, the thing that hits people's passion the most is all these retirees that's drawing pensions. And I think that number is between 18 to 20,000 ex-Detroit workers who work for the city in some capacity who are drawing pensions. And the pension liabilities right now, they haven't ruled whether or not they're going to be considered underfunded and therefore be the last on the agenda to get paid. So we got a real difficulty. I mean, what's been floated by the emergency manager is he offering something like 10 cents on the dollar, you know, for pensioners and all other kind of unsecured bondholders. So we got a real difficult situation.
Let me ask you this. You're talking about these are city employees, but you work for the auto industry. Is that a separate?
I work for the auto industry. So
is that a separate
situation? When we went through our bankruptcy, we didn't get touched.
Our
pensions remain the same. And part of that now wasn't because of benevolency on anybody's part. It was because of the size of the auto workers. When we went through the bankruptcy, the auto workers, we had 810,000 retired auto workers. We had so many retired auto workers that to accept cuts to our pensions and take us into PAIGC would have broke the entire pension system in America.
In America.
You know, so we were larger than the entire government pension system, so they stayed away from messing with our pensions. That's the only reason. It ain't because somebody felt good or felt like in our corner. It's just that it was so many auto workers and their spouses and things that it would have broke the system. Right now, we have our own health care system that's under Viva, and we are the largest grouping of insured Americans in the country. So I just wanted to show you what size meant. Size meant a lot.
Right.
In terms of our salvation. But now the Detroit workers, retirees, don't have that luxury, and they could be cut. Some of the retired workers, I think the firemen, do not pay into the Social Security fund, so they don't even get Social Security. So all they got is pensions. You know, so it's a real crisis that we're confronted with. So we got demonstrations every day on all these other issues. And that's just that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's the stuff that you see on the news. Behind that, all these other little cities have also been seized by the governor under this Act 436.
The what city are some of the other cities? Saginaw,
Pontiac, Benton Harbor, Flint, Highland Park, Harper Woods, all these cities, Muskegon Heights. All these cities, either the school district or the city administration itself, has been seized by the governor with these emergency managers. And it's devastating things that's taking place. Like, for instance, just 2 days ago, the city of Buena Vista by Saginaw and the city of Inkster, both at their school district, dissolved completely for the first time in history. So all of the children in those districts will have to go to other surrounding districts come September. And they've done that because they claim they got a new bill that passed that if these school districts become insolvent and doesn't have a way to pull themselves out of their debt, that they could dissolve the district and send the kids to surrounding districts around them with no say-say on the matter. So that just happened 2 days ago, and we were confronted with the first two. We got these other kind of crazy incidents taking place. Here in Highland Park, our emergency manager that took over the school district, now we caught him the other day throwing away books. Now, the school district of Highland Park is under federal indictment for failing to teach kids how to read, and we found them with five dumpsters full of books that they threw out of the library and getting ready to burn them.
I saw that on the internet.
Yeah, we saw that on the internet.
They have Malcolm X's books and... A lot of African history.
Yeah, see, all of them. They just threw them away. We caught them, and we've been demonstrating every week. We had another demonstration this morning about these managers that took over this district that's just going to throw away the books. I mean, we had preachers that offered to the churches to house the books. We had other people that stepped forward to take them, and they still wanted to go ahead and burn the books. So right now we kind of got a stalemate on that issue. But I'm just trying to show you how many other issues we got going on. You know,
right.
Norman, the foreclosures continue. We still got people getting evicted every day. And we're fighting on that battle. We got people with utility shutoffs, you know, and lined up to try to get help for the utilities before it turns cold. It's real hot right now, but we always have all of these people that get their utilities cut off in the wintertime, and people are preparing to try to figure that and fight that off right now. So we have a real crisis.
I just wanted to say I'm speaking with General Gordon Baker,
A
retired auto worker, and I wanted to say that you're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. Now, General, I wanted you to deal with the whole question of the water question, because that's been an issue for a number of years, right?
Yes, it has. We have a situation here. We got a movie made called Waterfront. And what done happened here is that we got people, we got the biggest body of fresh water on the earth. And we got people with no water because the water bills are so high that they can't pay the water bill. We got people with $3,000-$4,000 water bills, and they're cutting the water off. And not only do they cut your water off, but they put the real water bills on your tax rolls. And if you can't pay your property taxes on your home within 3 years, then the county can take you home. So we got a real crisis situation taking place and a battle in at least five different cities over the water question. It's an attempt to try to privatize the water. Most of our water has been publicly owned by cities. Highland Park has its own water system because Henry Ford built the city of Highland Park. That's where he built the old Model T, and he developed his own water system when he built the city. So we were one of the few cities that had our own water, and now they're attempting to try to run everybody out of the city or jack the water bills up so high that they can have an excuse to privatize it and sell the water, you know, to one of these water conglomerates, Nestle's or Coca-Cola, all of these other water conglomerates that's buying up all the water around the state. So we got a real battle there. We built a coalition with the city of Inkster, who's having trouble with their water, the city of Flint, that's having trouble with their water. So we got a real crisis on the waterfront that exists, and we got all of this water around us, but yet we can't drink it because we can't afford the water bills.
Now, Highland Park is it's a suburb of Detroit. I think it's the Smokey Robinson and Jackie Wilson grew up there, and it's you've lived there for a long time.
Yes,
and,
I have.
Detroit, Michigan, you were born and raised, unlike a lot of other people who migrated from Georgia and Tennessee and Alabama.
Yes.
You were actually born in
I was born in Detroit. I'm second generation. My parents were sharecroppers from Georgia.
Right.
You know, but I was born here in 1941. You know, and I spent most of my life in the auto industry. Matter of fact, I retired and I hired in the auto industry in 1963 and retired in 2003. So I worked 40 years in the auto industry here before retiring. I was able to retire from Ford Motor Company. But the situation in the auto plants is so different today than what it was when you knew it, Jolly, when you were back here. You know, back he was saying earlier how it was so many plentiful jobs because you could work one place on days, get discharged, and go to another plant down the street and get hired on afternoons. We used to have auto plants everywhere. And if you grew up as a young male in this city, you'd go get baptized in one of these plants. Right now, today, Detroit still has two major auto assembly plants in the city. We have Jefferson North of Chrysler and Pole Town of General Motors. We got two auto plants, and we got three casinos, and the city is still gone broke. I remember the days back when Coleman Young was the mayor, he'd always get up and say, there's nothing wrong with the city of Detroit that a couple of auto plants can't solve. Well, we got a couple of those, and they still can't solve it because they don't hire but a fraction of the workers that they used to. At Jefferson Plant, we used to have 7,000 employees. Now we've got 1,500, and the rest of the plant is full of robots. You walk in the plant, and you look at whole areas with not a human being in it at all, and robots just kicking out cars. They're producing more cars than we ever could produce with all the workforce we had. You know, so even though the auto industry is making money, and you see it in the news, and they're selling a lot of cars, they're not employing anybody. And we have a situation now where they're working in one plant on various shifts. They call them three live crews. They got three live crews of people that work, and they work rotating shifts, rotating throughout the week, 40-hour turns, and the plant never stops. But it doesn't have but a handful of workers in it. And that's true for all of the auto shops around the city. Ford Motor Company is supposed to be hiring at the old Mazda plant right now, and they only picked up about 100 people to put on a whole new shift. So you see what's happening is that we don't have the work that we used to have that supports the population, and that population that worked, spent money in the city, paid taxes, that kept the city up, all that's gone to naught, and nobody talks about that as the cause of the current crisis that we got right now in the city.
You're listening to Diasport Music on Uhuru Radio, and my name is Norman Richmond, and I'm speaking with General Baker. And could you talk about that population? You know, I guess, like I said, Detroit was either the fourth or fifth largest city. Then it went down to the teens. And
now it's 18th, I think. It's 18th. Supposed to be 18th now. We were at one point the fourth largest city. At that time, Detroit was the top of the line. If you wanted a good life, you came to Detroit. The auto industry was hiring everybody. We had the highest paid middle class or factory workers on the earth because of the auto industry and all of the auto employment that took place here. We were the top of the line. We had more single home dwellers than any other city in the nation because all these auto workers bought their own home. They were so proud of them, they used to carry pictures of their houses and their wallets when they came to work. And that was what Detroit was, you know. If we came out of being the arsenal for democracy, and if you left the South coming north, if you want to play, you went to Chicago. If you want to work, you came to Detroit. And that was the word out there. You came to Detroit to work, and work you got when you got here. And you pretty much was guaranteed a decent life for that run of period. Like I say, I made 40 years, 63 to 2003, but it's all over now. And it's all downhill, only a fraction of people working inside the shops, but still producing at the clip they had. They told us a bit in the 80s that if we got a couple of casinos, that would save us. We got three major casinos right downtown facing Windsor with the three hotels, and we still going under. You know, so we got a real crisis here, and look like it ain't no light at the end of the tunnel. People are fighting to try to figure out a way to survive, and that's the situation. We got the school districts. The school district is under the control of another emergency manager, and they are closing down schools like mad. The ones that they reopen are reopening as charter schools, knocking out the public school system. You know, so every way you turn, we got a crisis, and every way you turn, there's another demonstration or a call to march and protest. You know, so the city is wide open, you know, in that sense.
That charter school is bad news. When you talk about charter schools, we're talking about bad. That's bad news, isn't it?
Yes, it is. For the most part, the charter schools we got, it's just an attempt to privatize the schools, turn them into private, making institutions instead of serving the public. And that's taking place all over the state of Michigan, privatizing schools and closing them and going after the taxpayers' money that has always been sacred for education, you know.
Now, what's taking place on the, you have like a coalition of people. I understand you just had a big demonstration commemorating, I guess, the 50th anniversary of the, was a march on Detroit before there was a march on Washington in 1960.
We had 60,000 people showed up for that march, commemorating the 50th anniversary of the first I Had a Dream speech that was made in Detroit in 1963. that took place, and people came out diligently. And now those same forces are preparing to go down to D.C. For the second march. Now, the second march is taking on new importance because of a few things that happened since the march. At first, the march was going to be commemorative, celebrating the fact that we marched before. If you remember, the call for the march in 63 was free by 63.
Yes.
And free by 63 meant that it was 100 years since the passage of the Emancipation Proclamation.
Proclamation, right.
So in 1963, it was 100 years old, and our cry was free by 63, that 100 years later we ought to be free. Well, we're 150 years past the Emancipation Proclamation and catching almost as much hell as we was catching in 63. You know, so things haven't changed. But in that sense, the march that started off as being commemorative has picked up steam on a couple of fronts. First was the Supreme Court's decision, striking down Section 5, you know, of the Civil Rights Act that protected Voting Rights Act. And because of that, the march on August the 24th coming up that picked up more importance, and more people are joining those ranks. And the Trayvon Martin case that took place just a couple of weeks ago, with Zimmerman being acquitted, that forced even more people to join the effort on August the 24th. So that march is building. We probably have almost 50 or 100 buses leaving Detroit going to that march on August the 24th down in Washington to express a lot of things.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Baker.
Yeah.
Who is controlling this Washington, D.C. march? Will it be controlled by the petty bourgeoisie, or will the people really get a chance to control it? Because last march on Washington, you know, Malcolm talked about it being taken over. And
yeah,
who's going to control it this time?
The same folks that controlled it last time are going to control it this time. I think Al Sharpton got himself in front lines of this thing with his organization pretty much. But it's being supported and backed by all the labor people and labor organizations. This whole question of bankruptcy here in Detroit, it's going to put pressure on all the unions and the retirees to get on board and go to Congress asking for some help and relief from the federal government for the bankruptcy we've faced with. So each day, each other crisis adds into this crisis, and this thing is really dealing with a lot of momentum and a lot of steam. So even though the same old section, we ain't got the big six, but we got the big so-and-so that's calling this march, they may not be able to control it when we get to D.C., you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, I think that I just want people to understand that they keep saying that we're the largest, but I want to warn people that we're not just the largest, but we're the first. That we're not the only city going down this route. That the change in the methods of production that created jobs for a lot of human labor is being destroyed, and at the root cause of our crisis is that issue. Robots are taking away the work. You soon see Silicon Valley with the same situation as robots begin to make robots, and then robots make robots, and all the human labor is gone. And then you got a real crisis of the capitalist system in which they can't make profits, and each one of them driving the wages down lower and lower till they drive us to the earth. So I just want to leave that message. We're not the biggest. Don't let them say we're just the largest. Yeah, we are, but we're the first. That means the other ones are on their way.
Well, let me ask you this. I should have asked you this before, but
okay.
Technology can be used for positive or negative. Is there any way, if the right people control the system, that this technology can be used for people and not for profit, and everybody won't have, what I'm trying to say is that technology doesn't necessarily have to take away everybody's job.
No, it doesn't. It's the capitalist class that controls the means of production are not going to let it go. If we could control the means of production, we got an abundance of everything. We don't have any shortages for the first time in history. Food everywhere, cars everywhere, computers everywhere, phones everywhere. We don't have any shortages. But these capitalists got it, and they control it. They say that we made it, but it's theirs. And you can't get it unless you got money. And when they got money, because when they got jobs. You know, so we got the same situation where the control of the means of production is in the hands of the wrong people. But I want to say it's historic, you know, because workers have never been in control in this country. And we got to strive to try to get there, because once we can do that, you know, then we can look for some salvation, stop the foreclosures, beat back the banks, rescue our school systems and our cities from these people that have no interests of ours at heart. They just want to drive us to the earth, you know.
So like Richard Pryor said, if you want something in America, if you got to have a money or a pistol, you might be able to get it.
That's true.
But now, okay. I guess, with the capitalists being in control, so they might not put food in the store. So
they don't care.
That's what I mean.
They just don't care, man.
Right.
They got us growing gardens everywhere, man. Detroit done become a story for gardens everywhere, trying to grow some groceries. We're going back to sharecropping and try to figure out a way to continue to eat. You know, it's ridiculous. It's a dire set of circumstances.
I really appreciate this interview, General
Listen,
Gordon.
Listen, I appreciate a chance to blow and vent, you know, and get some of this off my chest, you know. Okay. All right.
All right, sir.
Okay, thank you.
And I appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
All right. Take care now.
All right. And we have been speaking with General Gordon Baker, Jr., a retired auto worker and a member of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. And also, he was the first African born in America that refused to fight in Vietnam.
Stands out on the highway like a creature from another time. It inspires the baby's questions.
What's that?
For their mothers as they ride. But no one stopped to think about the babies. How they would survive. And we've almost lost Detroit this time. How would we ever get over losing our minds? Miles from Detroit stands a giant power station. It ticks each night as the city sleeps, seconds from annihilation. But no one stopped to think about the people, how they would survive. And we almost lost Detroit this time. How would we ever get over losing our mind. County had sure enough disasters on his mind. And what would Karen Silkwood say to you
still alive. That when it comes to people's safety, Detroit. That time I almost lost Detroit. That time. Thank you.
Why don't you All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Somebody And while they're cursing and pulling knife, he take away the honor man wife. Oh, oh. Yeah, yeah. The honor man crying.
Cry.